You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Yes, now AUT's Alan Blackman joins us live for Desk Science. How are you going, Alan?
I'm doing very well, Shamina. The weather is rubbish, I have to say.
It's bloody shit, isn't it?
I was going to say that, but didn't know if it was allowed.
No, go for it. They're all good at BFM. After 9.30, I'm told. We're not allowed to say them before 9.30 or 9 o'clock or something like that. But on the wire, totally okay. So anyway, today we are looking at how scientists have found a way to reverse the aging process. Can you tell me a bit more about this? That sounds pretty, I don't know, almost sci-fi movie type of thing.
Absolutely. I will certainly try. Remembering I'm a chemist, not a biochemist. So
Give us your best shot.
I will certainly do so. So people want to know why we get old. And certainly part of the reason that we get old is that the DNA in our cells gets damaged through external factors like things like radiation or, dare I say it, chemicals in the environment, etc., etc. But the good old body's got an amazing repair system whereby it can repair DNA and then it keeps replicating as it should, etc., etc., etc. Now, the problem becomes that as we age, these imperfections in our DNA, the damage to the DNA builds up and up and up, and it gets to the point where the body can't repair it anymore. And the question has been, you know, what's going on there? Why does the body lose the ability to repair damaged DNA? And so there's some work, or there's of course lots of work being done all around the world on this question, because obviously it's a very, very important question. So very, very recently, in fact, last week, some workers in Australia and Harvard as well, over in the States, published a paper in Science, which is your top science journal, and they said that they could improve the lifespan of mice by about 20% simply by feeding them a very, very simple chemical, very, very simple, in fact. And they did this on the basis that they had been studying why the body loses its ability to repair the DNA, the damaged DNA. Excuse me. And they found that the way that the body does repair DNA is with a particular protein, a DNA repair protein. And that can be inactivated by other proteins in the body. And when it's inactivated, it can't repair the DNA anymore. So there's a molecule in the body called NAD+, which anybody who's studied first year biochem or whatever at university will know all about. And it seems that one of the functions of this molecule is to basically bind to this DNA repair protein and stop it being inactivated by the other proteins. So as we age, apparently the amount of NAD+, this molecule that binds to the repair protein, the amount of that goes down as we age, and hence the repair protein gets inactivated by the other proteins, and that's why we can't repair our DNA anymore. So I'm sure it's way, way, way more complex than that, but that's sort of the very sort of simple explanation of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so on the basis of that, they figured out that maybe if they fed mice a precursor chemical to this NAD+, maybe this might work. So a thing called NMN, which is nicotinamide mononucleotide. And again, probably all the biochemists in the audience will know what that is. And as I say, it's a very, very simple, it's surprisingly simple chemical. Actually, looking it up before, you can buy it at Amazon, of all things. So.
Well, I kid you not. You can probably buy anything on Amazon.
So they found that they would give the rats water with this in it, and their lifespan increased 20%. They would dose the rats with radiation that lowered their red blood cell count, and if they fed them this, then the red blood cell count came back up. Part of the interest in all of this, and in fact this is sort of being co-sponsored or funded or whatever by NASA, because they're looking at sending somebody to Mars, I don't know when, maybe the 2030s or whatever, and during that time they're going to be subjected to an awful lot of radiation, solar radiation, because they're going to be out of the Earth's protective atmosphere. And so they're looking at something that can reverse those effects of radiation or minimize the damage that's caused by radiation. And again, you know, when we fly to wherever you fly to, Dubai or London or whatever, you get as much sort of solar radiation as you do from a chest X-ray. So, you know, even
really?
Human, yeah, oh, indeed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, flying is not the world's best thing for your health necessarily. So, and that's all potentially damaging to DNA. And so that's why sort of NASA and Cal are interested in this work. And I mean, it sounds absolutely wonderful. If it's true, it sounds quite extraordinary. So these guys are starting clinical trials in the States in June. And so they've got 25 healthy individuals. So these are phase one trials. So they're just going to dose them up with that and see if it's safe, number one. And then they go on to the phase two and the phase three trials. They're talking online about this possibly being ready by 2020. But the FDA approval process for such things is notoriously slow and laborious. So
2020, actually, I mean, I sort of saw it as maybe not even in my lifetime. Like, that's actually really soon.
Well, again, who knows? I mean, there are such things as acceleration of these approvals. So
right, okay.
And dare I say it, it's a natural quote unquote molecule. It's a very, very close relation of vitamin B3. So potentially it shouldn't cause any problems, but of course you don't know these things ahead of time. But
totally.
You know, it sounds really, really quite amazing. And there's also another paper on a very, very similar topic just published last week as well. So there's, as I say, there's a lot of work going into looking at the aging process and, you know, if possible, slowing it down, stopping it, reversing it or whatever. And, you know, this seems to be a really, you know, a really big advance, I would say. So I guess watch this space, see what happens.
I mean, so obviously it has that sort of real life practical use for, you know, those NASA astronauts.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, for, I don't know, seeing it in mainstream use, is that kind of fighting against, I don't know, a natural process that kind of is a good thing in a way, you know, like, because I mean, if we're extending our lives,
then the government will have to put the superannuation age up to 67, won't they?
You know, that is one sort of thing. But I mean, you know, like, then I don't know, could we see our population massively expanding,
of
these sorts of ramifications from that? I don't know. I mean, like,
no, well, you know, that is obviously something that's going to have to be thought through, and the ethics people are going to have a field day on this.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. There are going to be some many, many discussions, I think, around ethics or something like this.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, from a purely scientific point of view, I mean, it's remarkable.
Totally.
You know, we're learning more about us. And, you know, I think that's amazing. Yeah.
It made me think of, you know, that movie when they put, like, the face cream on... I don't know. Adam's laughing.
Face cream.
You know, it's like a sci-fi movie, and they have like it's like this big corporation that has like this anti-aging face cream, and then it starts to like crack everyone's faces, and it gets like, and it's like this massive conspiracy sort of cover-up sort of thing. That's like the first thing I thought of. Maybe some of the listeners, I don't know what the movie's called. Maybe some of the listeners know what I'm talking about. But anyway, that's like the first thing that my brain went to. But shall we move on?
We possibly better.
Before I digress even further. So second, we're looking at how scientists in Germany have switched on the world's largest artificial sun for the first time.
Absolutely. And you might be asking, why would anybody need an artificial sun? To which the simple answer is, well, in Germany you don't get a lot of sun. So
right, okay.
And that actually was one of the justifications for doing this. So again, there's a lot of solar research that's going on around the planet. I mean, as I always tell my first year students, we're running out of oil, we need an alternative source of energy, and it's obvious that that source of alternative energy is going to be solar. Quite simple. We just need to know how to be able to use it. We haven't quite got there yet, but we're getting there. So if you're interested in solar research, and again, a lot of people are for obvious reasons, then what you need is a good reproducible source of solar radiation, I guess. And the sun itself doesn't supply that, funnily enough. So if you're in Central Europe, which you are in Germany, then obviously you get cloudy days and stuff like that. Relocating the whole shebang to the middle of the Sahara Desert doesn't even give you constant light intensity from the sun. So it's very variable. So if you're going to do these sort of experiments, you need a constant intensity source. And so basically these guys in Germany, they've got 149 xenon lamps all together. They can focus them all into a square of around about 20 centimeters by 20 centimeters, and that gives you temperatures of around about 3,000 degrees Celsius. And one of the things they're very interested in is production of hydrogen from water. And they found that this can be done with this new source. They put water on a catalyst surface and they hit it with this very intense solar radiation, about 10,000 times the radiation from the sun. And they find that they get small amounts of hydrogen and oxygen coming off. So again, that's going to be the fuel of the future. That's the way that humankind will survive, is solar-powered electrolysis of water to give you hydrogen and oxygen, and hydrogen's going to be the new hydrocarbons. That's going to be our new fuel. It just is. So, you know, that's why people are working very hard at doing this, and that's the whole reason why they've made this artificial sun in Germany.
Awesome. That's super exciting. And I guess also, like, the sun, you know, doesn't come and go like the sun that we know. They can have it on the whole time.
You can work 24 hours, yes.
Yeah. Cool. And so lastly today, we're looking at a controversial figure, to put it one way, who used to teach at the University of Melbourne.
Yeah, very interesting this. So I don't know if many of you listeners have been to the University of Melbourne, but it's sort of an oldish brick type sort of university, lots of old buildings there. Very, very high ranking university in the world. It's sort of in the top, oh gosh, at least 50 anyway in the world. It's, you know, a very, very highly respected university. It just happens that it's got at least, well, from what I could count anyway, five buildings that are named after people from the past, obviously, but whose views today we probably would view with distaste, I think would be the mildest way of saying it. So they had a building called the Richard Berry Building, which was named after a professor of anatomy who worked there from 1906 to 1929. And he originally came from England. He was a surgeon and also an anatomist, and also a eugenicist, to add to his list of things. So, and for those of you who don't know anything about what eugenics is, basically it's the proposal that people who are less than perfect should be sterilized, shot, locked up, etc., etc., etc. So he was a great advocate of eugenics. And this was in the time before Hitler came along, and he was proposing that that the Aboriginal race were mentally inferior to white people. And in order to so-called prove this, he got a lot of skulls of Aboriginals, and he was busy measuring these and looking for any sort of correlation between the size of the skull, the size of the brain, and intelligence. And these were rediscovered around about 2003. They were sitting in some dusty old thing in one of these buildings. He also did experiments on live people, so he went around measuring live people's skulls, and so he went to sort of public-private schoolboys and then slum dwellers and prostitutes and so-called mental defectives, etc., 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 looking for this. And he was, a great advocate of locking these people up or forcibly sterilizing them or moving them out to, you know, somewhere where they couldn't interfere with the rest of the race, et cetera, et cetera.
And the university just let this all happen?
Well, he was, by all accounts, he was a distinguished academic who had some pretty kooky views about things. And so one of the buildings was named after him. And so the anatomy building, it was a new anatomy building at the time, and it was named after him, presumably because he was the professor of anatomy at the time, I think. And so obviously, with the benefit of hindsight, this has been viewed as not the greatest move to have a building at a prestigious university named after a eugenicist.
Slightly problematic.
Indeed. And so just this month, a couple of weeks ago, in fact, they have, in fact, renamed the building, which was originally an anatomy building, but now it's a mathematics building. And so they've renamed the building to the Peter Hall Building, who was a famous mathematician. So, and again, if you have a trawl around on Google, you'll find that there are four other buildings who are named after people who did seem to have similar views to Richard Berry. The best one that I can find, well, best in inverted commas, I guess, was a guy by the name of Frank Tate, who had a building named after him. And he said 15% of the Victorian population at his time, the state of Victoria, they should be forcibly sterilised. And he actually backed a parliamentary bill to ensure that this would happen, which apparently in 1926 was passed but not enacted.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
really?
Yes.
Jesus. And so he still has a building.
Yes, he does. Yes.
Along with several others who have these dodgy views.
Yeah.
Why has the University of Melbourne not been more proactive about this? Like, I mean, because also I don't know. Maybe I'm being cynical about this as well, but they're changing this anatomy school's building name because it only because it's moving to
that might have been a convenient excuse possibly to actually do that. But if you recall, a couple of years ago, I think was at Oxford or Cambridge, they had a statue of Cecil Rhodes that they were looking to take down.
Right. Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that happened as well. And again, you know, it is with the benefit of hindsight. And you know, the things that people did 100 years ago, their beliefs, etc., they're totally different from, well, in most cases, what we believe now.
Right.
And so, you know, we're judging them from today's moral viewpoint and everything. And you know, then the big question comes: do you rewrite history? Do you try and gloss over it, or what do you do? So you can kind of understand that there's arguments both sides here, but
nevertheless, it's still kind of this awkward celebration if you know the building is still named after these figures.
Well, I don't think there's any sort of university buildings in Germany named after Hitler, put it that way. So
probably not.
Yeah,
no.
But a very interesting story, I guess.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah.
Has there been, like in Australia, has there been a lot of support for this, and or conversely as well, was there a lot of protests around this building being named after this man? Or
I think certainly the good old students got onto it, and I think this has been a relatively long running thing.
Yeah,
I believe
I would assume so.
There are articles on the web going back a few years and stuff. So I think I don't think there's too much opposition to it, put it that way.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. you would certainly hope not.
It's probably safe to assume.
You'd hope, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Well, thank you once again, Alan, for joining us this week for Dear Science.
My pleasure.
We will talk to you again next week.
Cool. Very good. Thanks, guys.
That was Dear Science.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.